Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Dewey Jelm, walleye tournament angler from Pierce, South Dakota, back on the show. Many of you know who Dewey is. He's been having quite a bit of success in the last 4 or 5 years here on the walleye tournament scene. He's one of the featured anglers on the very popular YouTube series Tour Level Gold. We're partway through the tournament season, so to speak. Dewey, in this podcast, we're going to reflect on the tournaments that Dewey's had so far. He's had some great finishes in a couple of NWTs and recently won an MWC on what you might say is home body of water, Lake Oahe. With his tournament partner, Tyson Keller. And so, yeah, we're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into each of the tournaments that Dewey has had so far this year. So let's get into it. We cover a lot of ground in this one. Another great conversation with the one and only Dewey Jelm.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. And get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at TKICNC.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC.
Give us a little bit of a recap there on Lake Sharp, and I might have a few questions after.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, last year when that tournament schedule came out, we knew that we were going to Lake Sharp. I mean, obviously your first reaction is, you know, excited because you get to fish at your home body of water. But then after a couple hours of thinking about it, I'm like, you know, Lake Sharp really isn't that big. And especially in the springtime when, you know, a lot of them fish move upstream towards the dam. So I just knew that it was going to be a little bit of a tougher tournament. And if a guy could just find one or two of them overs, not even necessarily one big one each or two big ones each day, but if you could just get one decent bite each day, that was going to be the separator, because everybody is pretty much going to be catching the same caliber of fish. It's all going to come down to decisions on what you throw back and keep and etc. But yeah, I mean, I had it circled, but I've never been more stressed in a tournament, like pre-fishing, all this stuff. Like you go into these tournaments and you're like, oh, I got this spot and this spot and this spot. And you know, a lot of river tournaments are like boat race spots, and you just kind of like, you sit back and watch and you're like, some of these spots that, you know, it's taken me, you know, my whole life or time, I should say, living in Pier to find and figure out some of these spots. Like, these guys are so good that they come in there and like in a week they literally have them all figured out. There's people on every single one. You're just like kind of like shaking your head like, how the heck is this happening? And so yeah, I mean, I had a lot of stress going into that tournament, but the one thing that I did have going on my side is I pretty much knew what it was going to take to do well in that tournament as far as, you know, size of fish. And then it was going to come down to whether you got one or two of them big bites today. And that's ultimately what it did come down to. But I do kick myself a little bit just for the fact that I really tried to make a bite happen that wasn't happening. I just thought like one of these days they're going to show up overnight, because that's kind of how it happens on the river. It's like you don't catch anything for whatever, two months or a month, and then all of a sudden like you fish that spot again and it's completely loaded and then they're the right fish. So I try to really force a bite to happen there that wasn't happening. But still very, very happy with the outcome, because that tournament could have went the other way just as fast. As you know, I think I finished in 11th place and super tight all the way up to basically first place. Mm-hmm. So that tournament could have definitely went the other way just as fast as it landed me in 11th place. So happy with the outcome of that one. We got out of there. It was nice to sleep in my own bed, but that was definitely not my favorite place to fish a tournament on.
You know, I'm curious about like the stress and like that pressure that you're talking about. I really hope, like as a fan of yours, I really hope that it isn't like the industry pressure or like, you know, the pressure of your fans, you know, to perform well. Or is it more of a personal thing? Like, do you just really like put that on pressure on yourself, or where do you feel like that pressure like actually kind of comes from, like in your head?
I don't know, because it's weird. So I live in a unique spot where I live in Pier. So, you know, Lake Sharp is below the dam and Lake Oahe is above the dam. And when I fish on Lake Oahe, I don't feel that pressure. And I think it's a little bit more just to do with the size of fish. Like, you can separate yourself a lot with them big overs that are up there on Lake Oahe, whereas on Lake Sharp, it's such a tough deal to catch, you know, one over a day, honestly, on Lake Sharp. And it's very hard to separate yourself. So you have to be very, 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 very smart about your decisions. Throwing back a couple ounces could ultimately cost you a lot in the end. And I think if that's where the pressure came from, was just knowing that like it was going to be like all about making the right decisions on what to keep and what to throw back. Because like I said, on Oahe, it's totally different. Like, Oahe's still my home body of water. But you can separate yourself a lot on the Lake Oahe just with the size of the fish that are up there.
Like that exact same tournament, but maybe just happened somewhere else, you know, away from you. Do you just feel like that pressure isn't the same just because like if you don't make that correct decision on those fish, like if you flip-flop a few ounces in your live well because of some, you know, some throwbacks in the morning, like do you feel like there's just sort of like a built-in excuse that you can live with because it's not your home body of water, but being it was so close to home, like you just felt like you were gonna have a hard time living with that?
I think so. I think that's probably what it is just basically being so close to home. You know, if I would compare Lake Sharp a lot to something similar as far as like the Illinois River, where it's a lot of, you know, the smaller fish. There is big fish in there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, we saw that, right? Bobby Crow caught a couple of sluggers.
Yeah, like, you know, there were two of the biggest fish I've ever caught on Lake Sharp, and he caught two of them in one day. So, I mean, hats off to him. But, like, it's just a different fishery, which – it's fun to fish. Like, I like fishing that kind of stuff just because it is all about decisions, and everybody's for the most part is catching the same fish, but it's about the decisions that you make at the end of the day that create the outcome. So I think if it was in a different area or a different place, I probably wouldn't have felt as much pressure. But just because like Lake Sharp, like I said, is such a, like, it's a boat race spot to a lot of these spots that I fish, and just knowing like I don't think I'm going to be able to do the rotation that I want to do on these spots, just because there's probably going to be a lot of my other buddies that are fishing it that fish the exact same way as me. So like, I'm going to be fishing behind people, and it's just like, I mean, it's totally like a mind game. So I think that's where a lot of the pressure came from, was just the unknowns. Like, you go fish on Lake Oahe and there's very few like spot on the spot spots. But you fish on Lake Sharp and it's very much like a one boat or two boat spot. And if you pull in there, or you do something wrong, you drive over top of the fish, like them fish are completely gone and you're not going to catch them again that day. So just knowing all the different variables that went into that tournament, I think is what just kind of led me down that road of stressing out about it.
Yeah. No, I just found that interesting, and I kind of wanted to, you know, push that button on you a little bit because we can look back on it in hindsight, and you did have a solid finish, so that makes the conversation easier. But I do find that stuff interesting, because so much of this tournament fishing is mental. And watching the tour level gold episodes, you know, of that tournament, one thing that I thought was interesting, and it was like you kind of barely touched on it, was that, you know, was it day two that your spot filled up, your morning spot just filled up with boats? And, and you know, watching those clips, you know, like I'm learning, like I'm hearing the interview and I'm hearing you describe it. But when those clips are shown, that video clips of you fishing, and there's like, there's two boats in the forefront, and there's three boats behind you, and it looks like you're fishing, you know, you're fishing in a marina or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and you're kind of describing it like, man, you know, it filled up with people, and then you're fishing it, and you're just talking about all the different, you know, all the sonar pinging going on, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm so curious, maybe just like a quick description for somebody that doesn't know, when you're fishing a tournament and it's like that, where, you know, like you're already describing like the rotation, and that you really just, in some of these cases, you got to combat fish a little bit. You know, you got to put your head down and spend a little bit of time just trying to beat the guys around you. What is that like? Like, as far as a mental processing, like if you're one of the first boats in there and the boats start stacking up, or maybe you come in and it's already full, like maybe just walk me through some of that combat fishing of like, when do you stay? When you stay, what are some of the protocols to fishing? What are some of the things you're looking for when you're just looking for to catch fish in and amongst a lot of boats? And then, and walk me through the decision to ultimately pull up the trolling motor and leave.
Yeah. So basically, like, it's probably a little bit hard to decipher all that on tour level gold, just because of the timelines and everything. But so basically what happened on day one is I was boat 40. And I was a little bit worried. I was basically, or I think I was boat 40, whatever it was, 44 or something like that. But anyways, I had this spot that I wanted to go to first, but I was just waiting to see, you know, who went that direction. And the spot that I was going to was ultimately a spot completely opposite of everywhere everybody else was going. It basically, they called my number, and I took a right instead of going straight where everybody would go out into the main river. And I had this one little spot up in there that I was catching fish. And the last day of practice, I pull in there and I made one cast called a 21 incher. I'm like, and I seen the right marks. Like, I know that they're there. Don't need to make another cast. Don't need to burn them up. And so I left, and ultimately that's where I wanted to start the tournament. And just so happens, nobody went that direction. So they called my boat number. I take a hard right, go up and start fishing it. And literally as soon as I put the trolling motor in the water, I look behind me and there's a boat coming right behind me. And I'm like, oh, great. And so I got up to the spot that I wanted to fish really fast. And we put three fish in the live well in like a matter of minutes. I mean, it was game on in there. Like, I think if there wouldn't have been any other pressure in there, or maybe I would have blew them up too, who knows. But I think I could have had, and I don't know if I would have had a better bag or not, but I think I would have been like ultimately done fishing by like 8:30 in the morning, just because the right fish were there. But it was such a small spot. There ultimately ended up being, I think there was five of us in this like 100-yard little circle area. Just way too much action. You could just tell them fish. As soon as all them other boats pulled in there, we were pushing them fish down to the bottom. They were schooled up, and then they just all kind of started to spread out. And I knew, like, I knew that, like, as soon as that happened, like, my wheels were turning, like, all right, what's the next plan of attack? Because this is definitely not going to happen anymore. But you just try to milk it for all it's worth. And I think it was, like, 9. I mean, I probably fished in there a little bit too long. But I stayed in there until, like, 9:30 or 10, and then just started doing my rotation. Well, there were some spots on day one that I never even got to fish that I really wanted to. So on day two, I did not go back up to that, my original starting spot that I started on day one. Just, I didn't know if them guys stayed up there all day or who else was making a rotation on it later on in the day. And I'm just like, I'm not feeling it. So I started on a different spot that I fished on day one. I think it was like my second or third spot that I fished on day one. I started on that spot, caught two right away, or maybe three. But again, like, just like, I knew that it wasn't, I could have probably sat there all day, but like, you have all these other spots you want to started running around and fishing. So then ultimately I packed up and went into my, I think, second or third spot. And ultimately that's where you see me kind of fishing around them houses and stuff. And on that episode of Tour Level Gold. And that's really where I spent the rest of my tournament. Just because, not that I felt like the fish were a lot better quality in there, but I was getting bit. Like, it was pretty dang easy to get bit in there. And I just thought, you know, if there was any chance, if I could get like a pre-spawn 21 inch or something in here, like, that's a huge deal in that tournament. So I basically, it was that theory of don't leave fish to find fish. And so that's kind of where I just stuck out the rest of my tournament.
And when you're fishing around other boats, great anglers, I mean, we're talking a tournament, like the highest level tournament, right?
Yeah.
And you know, now you can't control other boats. Like, I'm not trying to insinuate that you're worried about what other people are doing, but it's all a factor. Like, all these things are a factor. I'm curious, like where does your confidence ultimately lie? You know, and maybe it's just, you know, if you already have five in the live well, it makes these decisions a lot easier. But like, to the average fan, like myself, I would consider myself a big fan. I love watching these tournaments. I love seeing the interviews, and I love just sort of, you know, seeing it all and taking it all in and learning from it. And, but also just being entertained by it. But one thing that, as a non-tournament angler, like, that it's so difficult that I'll maybe never understand is those types of tournaments. And the next tournament we're talking about too is kind of like this way. But like, you know, it's not just river tournaments, but a lot of these river type tournaments seems like you guys get so close together and you're fishing so competitively. Like, I don't even understand how you'd be effective, you know, doing a lot of those things. Like, I wouldn't even know what it's like to make a cast, like a lob cast, underhand 40-foot cast, when if I just turned to my right, I'd be casting across like two boats. You know, it's like you guys are just so close together and everybody's on a high level. I know we're talking to Dewey Jelm here, but like, everybody's good. Like, what do you do differently? Or maybe just like, is there any sort of, you know, sort of etiquette or just anything that you could give me to help me kind of describe what those situations are like?
Yeah, I think for the most part, most of these guys on the NWT are, they have a lot of sportsmanship and they play nice. But, you know, kind of what goes around comes around type of thing. And I've always been one that I don't want to be in somebody's way. Like, if they were there first, that's okay, whatever. But yeah, so I think there's a lot of etiquette that goes into it. But like I said, most of the people out there are pretty dang good. But like, for me, like on day one, for instance, like, I think you even heard me maybe say something like along the lines of like, in the Tour Level Gold, like with all the pinging going on, and like, there was times where I literally couldn't even cast. Like, I'd see a fish and I was getting lined up to cast, and I'd have to like look up to make sure I wasn't going to hit somebody's boat. And I'm like, that is not my style of fishing. I do not like it. I don't like sharing fish. I don't like fishing around other people if I don't have to. So I think it's just knowing when to basically fold your cards and get the heck out of there and go do your own thing. So, I mean, for me, if I can help it at all, I just don't fish around other people. I don't fish good around other people. But if you do find yourself in that situation, and I have multiple times, it's like, just don't even look and don't try not to look. If they net a fish, just don't even look and pay attention to what's going on. Just try to keep focus, and you can only do what you can do. And if they're catching them better or doing something better than you, well, then that's how it's going to be. But yeah, like I don't try to get too spun out on it, but I definitely don't like fishing around people if I don't have to.
So the Mississippi River, stop number two, you had a phenomenal finish over there, and that was a river tournament. So, you know, some of the same topics that we're talking about here, you know, the boat race type tournaments or, you know, the type of spots you're looking for, like, you had a second place finish there. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that was a wild tournament. Didn't see that coming either. So basically all through practice, obviously, like when you fish in Mississippi, Willowcats are going to be a huge player, pretty much almost no matter what time of year you go there. That's one thing I don't want to say hate, but I don't like dealing with live bait. I don't even like dealing with night crawlers, but you're on the Mississippi. It's legal to use them. You're probably crazy if you don't have them. And that tournament, we spend a lot of time in practice basically casting willow cats and crankbaits. But there was a little bit of a shortage going around with willow cats. So, like, we were trying to be pretty cautious with what we were using. But then at the end of the day, it's like, well, you got to use them, because if you don't know what's there or the potential, like, what's the point? So, I mean, our game plan was basically throwing willow cats and crankbaits. And I was throwing a lot of, like, glass shad wraps, RS shad wraps on wing dams. I know that there's a lot of guys using, like, DTs and stuff like that. But I just wanted to throw something different that not every wing dam has already seen. Cause obviously that's like one of the, like, that was the best bite that was going on for sure. I mean, I had like one day, like 50, 60 fish, and all really good quality, but there again, like, it was in a different pool, dealing with the locks and don't know what the pressure is going to be on them things. So yeah, there's just a lot of variables. And then, come tournament time, before tournament, we found this spot in practice where I think we caught like a 21 or 22 incher and like an 18 incher, and we fished around there for a little bit longer and, you know, never really caught anything else. Well, I think it was like the Tuesday or Wednesday before the tournament, it was like super, super crappy out, raining, blowing 30, 40 mile an hour. And I went out at 6:30 and I just kept having this like thing that said, go check this spot one more time to see if it's even a thing. So I roll up to this spot, nobody at the parking lot. I get there in the morning, I go up there, and my first cast was like a 21 incher. Second cast was like a 20 incher. And I'm like, all right. And I've seen them all over on my size scan. I'm like, I don't need to make another cast here. If I get a good boat number, I'm going to roll up here and I'll catch a couple of fish. And then ultimately I'm probably going to lock up and go fish up in pool 7 and go cast crankbaits on wing dams. Like, that's what my game plan was. And go to the rules meeting that night, and I draw boat number 80 out of 84. I'm just like, you got to be kidding me.
How does that work, the boat draw at the NWT? Sorry to interrupt, but
it's just random.
Okay, so basically it's assigned to you, but you find out when you get there. At the rules meeting.
Yeah, at the rules meeting. Yep. So we don't know anything until we get to the rules meeting. And then it's like in these river tournaments, it's literally like almost a lottery draw, because a lot of these other guys know about the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you get the right boat number, you're going to get there, but then you might not get it on day two, which, I mean, ultimately really sucks.
Yeah.
But to be frank, but it is, that's just how it is. It's a boat draw. And I hate tournaments like that, because it doesn't necessarily dictate who found the best pattern or makes the right decisions. It's literally like who got the best boat number, potentially, not always, but that's just like one of the things that goes through your mind. So anyways, like, we go to the rules meeting and I get boat 80 out of 84. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you gotta be kidding me. Like, I can never draw a good boat number on.
That's like a good day two boat draw, but that doesn't.
For sure. Yeah. But so my mind didn't even go to that place, like, oh, well, I could maybe go fish it on day two. Cause I'm just like, well, if I'm not going to go there on day one, I'm not going to go there on day two type of thing. So, for like a spot like that. So I'm watching all these people at takeoff on day one. And again, it's another spot where, like, if they go the opposite way that everybody else is going, I know exactly where they're going. And boat 80, I get called, there's boat 80 out of 84, and there was one other boat, and I seen that guy fishing up there in practice, so I knew where he was going as well, and I thought he was going to be fishing a little bit different spot than what I was fishing, and ultimately that's what happened. He was fishing his own little spot, and I was fishing mine, but boat 80, and there was only that other boat and myself that turned and went that way. And I'm just like, I literally was shaking when I was driving up there. Cause I'm just like, I cannot believe this happened.
Yeah.
And so we get up to the spot, we come around the corner, and there's a local sitting there. And, I wish I would have asked the guy his name, but I pull up there and, you know, I get close. It's a spot, and start casting. And I don't remember even how the conversation went, but just like, how are you guys doing? Whatever, you know, small talk. And I'm just like, oh gosh, who knows how long they've been here. Maybe they've caught them all already, blah, blah, blah. We fish for like 10, 15 minutes. No bites, nothing at all. I'm talking to my co-angler and like we're fishing out of the back of the boat. And I turn around and look and like that guy is pulling away out of the bass boat or in this bass boat. And I'm like, okay, sweet. So I pull over like 30, 40 feet, get a little bit closer to where I wanted to be making this cast. Cause it was very specific on how you had to work this little area. And so I slide over there and we proceeded to put like one of the craziest best bites I think I've almost ever had in my life experience, especially in a tournament. We were running two dead rods. At that point, we were just throwing willow cats and we were running two dead rods out the back and then casting two dead rods. And we literally could not keep our dead rods in the water. It was just like one after another, after another, after another. And after we put like the fifth fish in the box, like I think it was like 8:20 or something like that in the morning, I turned around and like I looked at the guy and I'm like I don't know what to say, but thank you. Like you did not have to move. This is not my spot, but I appreciate it more than you ever will know. And he's like, oh dude, we get it. We're just out here fun fishing. You know, that was awesome to watch you guys catch him or whatever, however he said it, but it was just like, holy cow, what a blessing. Because if you would have sat there honestly, probably much longer, I probably would have just left because we couldn't make the right cast. I don't know how much time we're going to be burning. If I'm going to go up in the pool 7, I don't want to be waiting for a lock or for the barge and all this other stuff. So all these things are going through your mind and then it just happened. So yeah, that's kind of how day one went. And then I literally, just because it was such a unique spot, I literally sat on that spot all day long and never moved. We were trying to, I think we had I don't remember exactly the time frame on what we caught and how we caught it, but we had some spots left open to catch some bigger slots. And I just kind of really wanted to sample it hard to see what day two is going to bring. Cause day two, now, if you remember, I was boat 80 going out day one.
Yeah.
Day two, I'm the fourth boat out. Like I'm for sure getting this spot on day two, unless, you know, there's a local or something there setting in there, but like for sure getting this spot. So that's like, I was super excited about that. So I just kind of wanted to keep an eye on that. Almost guard the spot a little bit, if you will. And that's what we ultimately did. Like if it was anywhere else, if it was on Lake Oahe or anywhere else that I knew that nobody else was going to be fishing, we would have been out of there by 8:30 and I would have been pre-fishing for the rest of the day, trying to find other areas that were similar.
Yeah.
But that's just not how it went down. And yeah, it was absolutely crazy. The bite windows that I experienced on day one, just setting in a spot, like I spot locked in one spot, except for, I guess I spot locked in two spots technically, but where we ultimately caught the fish in the tournament, I spot locked there and I literally never touched my trolling motor the entire day. So I've never done that, but when you do that, you just get a really good feel for, say, the bite windows. You get a good feel for how the structure and, you know, like what the cast is that you need to be making. You just like, you learn that spot so well. And it got to the point where like on day two, you could basically call your shots. Like if you can hit this spot, you're going to catch one almost every time. And that's, I think, what ultimately helped us out. And, you know, we did throw some fish back on day one that I wish we had on day two. We threw like a 210 back, just cause we had some giant slots on day one, and that fish alone would have been very, very close, to win the tournament for me.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at tkicnc.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long
going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. From a tournament perspective, when you talk about just how dramatic the bite windows were, like immediately where my brain goes is like the practice. How does that affect your practice? Or what would be some recommendations for me as far as that goes? Like when you're breaking down water, how do you start to understand that there's these really dramatic bite windows? And then how do you look back on your pre-fish and think that, like, if like any spot that you checked between a bite window that you start, mm-hmm. that you're starting to understand, it's like, how do you not want to like, well, you know what? That spot looked pretty decent. Like seeing these fish, can you see these fish on your side scan, on your electronics, and just know that they're there and then have confidence going back during a bite window to catch them? But like how much of learning how to catch them or figuring out where that cast needs to be, it's like you almost need to catch it. Like I'm curious about how that sort of affects your practice.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I had a lot of time to think about this on day one where I literally, like I said, I spot locked in that spot all day. And I'm just like, I'm experiencing these bite windows where it's like you go 2 hours and you don't catch anything. And then you're just like, okay, well, I know that they're here, so I'm not leaving. And then you'd catch like five or six or seven in like 5 minutes. And then it would go on a dead spell again. And I don't know if it was like necessarily a bite window or if it was just like the fish were moving in these big schools and pushing bait around. And then that's just ultimately when they ended up back right where you're making your cast. But that thought went in my head a lot where it's like, if you pulled up on this spot at the wrong time, say in that 2 hour lull.
Yeah.
And you don't catch anything, like you're going to write that spot off. And I'm just like, how many spots did I write off that were the tournament winning spots?
Yeah.
So it's super hard. Like it's definitely like, I don't understand it, but I mean, when you're in practice, like you don't have time to sit there on one spot for 8 hours, obviously.
Right.
Let alone like, I don't think I probably have ever sat in a spot more than an hour.
And you can't afford to only pre-fish during bite windows. So I'm curious, like, how do you be productive then? How do you try to manifest confidence and, or like meaningful, you know, tournament strategy, you know, during a situation like that? I think that is fascinating.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the bite windows that we're talking about, like in that specific spot where, you know, like 15 minute bite window type things. But like when I'm fishing a lot of the other stuff, I would just be like from noon to two type, like, okay, noon to two, they're not biting very good. From two to four, like they're biting very good type of thing. Mm-hmm. But like, again, it's so hard to say that because on that particular spot, it would literally go for 2 hours, nothing. And it didn't matter. It was right away in the morning. I think the fish were just really fresh. They haven't been messed with. They didn't see a willow cat. You could catch them like your first cast. You could basically count on catching one. And you would like for the first half an hour, it was game on. And then it would be like, okay, well, did you blow that school up? What happened? And then go an hour, maybe catch one. And then all of a sudden just like, can't keep the rods in the water again. But like on them wing dam spots and spots like that, I don't know how you would ever know that's exactly what's happening. I just don't feel like it probably is that big of a deal on the wing dams. Like them fish are, if they're pulled up on top, the wing dams are in front of them, like they're going to eat. And I think there's always fresh fish that are just, you know, rotating through on a lot of them spots. But I can't say that for sure about like them little bite windows, just cause I've never experienced something like that. So I don't know if it was just, like I said, fish moving around in that area. And that's just where they, you know, every hour that was kind of their rotation when they got bait trapped again. And that's when they started the feed. I don't really know exactly what was going on there, but I definitely, was very aware of it after day one that like, okay, on day two, if it happens, don't get rattled about it, because you could fish for 4 hours, not catch anything, and then catch your limit in 5 minutes. So like that's that was just the confidence that I gained from sitting in that spot all day long. But
yeah,
I'll be surprised if I ever have a tournament where I spot lock in a spot for 2 days in a row. And for sure have that outcome. I know that I've seen other tournaments, especially on the Mississippi, like we talk about these boat race spots, like that's kind of what it is. Like you get the spot on the spot, like you're going to have a good day. But like, I doubt I'm ever going to get to experience that again. But yeah, it was a great tournament. Came down to the wire. JJ ended up winning that thing. That's the second NWT win. So hats off to him. But yeah, I got a little bit of emotional again when I weighed in, because I'm like, holy cow, like it could happen. Like that's just how these tournaments go. Like if you're in the position to win potentially on day one, if you're within striking distance and you weigh the same as what you do on day two or a little bit more, generally you're going to move up. And if a couple people, if they slipped, like that's your opportunity to win that tournament. That's how I've won a couple tournaments. I was never, like Sakakawea last year, I wasn't in first place after day one. I just had a couple of right bites. And I knew what I needed to make that move. And if I don't get it, I'm not going to win. So, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's all part about tournament fishing in the slot. These slot tournaments that we deal with, it's all about making the right decisions, knowing what to keep, when to keep it, when to fold your cards, when it's not going your way. So it's a little bit different than the bass world, where you can call and it's basically just catch, your biggest five. When we go to the Great Lakes and some of these areas where we can call, then it's a whole different ball game. But the slot limits, which is probably about half the tournaments that we fish a year, there's a lot of decisions that go into it.
Describe figuring out where that perfect cast is, like on a smaller tournament type spot on the Mississippi River. Like when you roll up on a spot and you're practicing, and you're how is it that you discover that spot, or you scan that spot? Like what are you looking for? Like how do you ultimately get to the point where you know on a good spot what the perfect cast is on a spot that sets up like that? I mean, more specifically, like I'm just so curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these spots are going to be, especially if you get like in the backwaters, let's say, they're going to be like little eddies or current seams where them, and it doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, the deeper ones are generally better, but it doesn't have to be that deep. One of my best spots in practice was this big sand flat that right up next to the shoreline. It wasn't even really a current break or an eddy. I found it when I was side scanning this back channel, literally because I was too scared to drive fast, because it was like trees sticking up, sand all over the place, 1-2 foot of water. Well, I seen on my side scan that there was like a drop off over by the shoreline, and I could see fish setting in it. And so, we went back there and threw willow cats in there and some crankbaits and caught the heck out of them. But so that was a little bit unique spot. But a lot of these other spots are like where current hits, the shoreline or a tree or whatever, and behind it, there's going to be like a little eddy or a current seam. And that's ultimately what I'm looking for when I go to them spots. There's a couple other spots, behind wing dams or whatever, where the wing dams would blow out. And I've never really experienced it before, but like I got into this one spot behind this wing dam and there were some weird currents going on. And I took my boat off spot lock and literally never moved. Like that's like the boat just sat in one spot. You could sit there all day long. It was just that big of a current seam and eddy in that little bit of a back boil there. And then, so like you figure out them spots like that, which it's not easy to do in practice, especially when there's wind and you can't see a lot of them spots.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Cause so many spots look the same, but they're not. Like a lot of them are going to be silted in. They're going to be way too shallow. They might look really good. It looks like there's a big, nice current seam coming off this point. And then you get up there and it's 1 foot of water. And that's ultimately not where the fish are going to be setting at. It's 1 foot of water for 50 yards. So the spots that are really good, it seems like, were, steep or deep little holes close to shorelines with good flow on them. And a lot of times in the Mississippi, especially This time of the year, generally we have a little bit higher water flow, so a lot of them fish are still going to be in the backwaters. But obviously, like everybody knows, we didn't really have much snow, and so there just wasn't a lot of runoff, and so the water levels were actually falling even during the tournament. We got like a half inch or maybe an inch of rain one day, and it spiked up during the tournament. But during practice, for the most part, and even the weeks leading up to it, a lot of them, like the reports that I was looking at, the water was falling. So first thing that goes through my mind is like, can we even get in the back channels with these big boats? And because it's sketchy even on high water, there's a lot of spots that you're like, holy cow, I can't believe I'm taking my Ranger boat in this thing. It's like you don't even dream about ever driving through some of this stuff. But the first thing that was going through my mind with the water flowing is like, all these fish, even though it's not summertime yet, these fish are going to be pulling out of these back channels for the most part, is what I felt like. And like the wing dam fishing could be really good. So that's kind of where, like, and you always hear about wing dam fishing on the Mississippi. So right. That's kind of where I was kind of going, like in the practice. But like, then you start seeing all these little juicy spots, and I had probably 10 or 12 spots that I'm like I felt like I could catch one or two fish there, but I never felt like I could sit there all day. And then it's like the whole thing about going back to Lake Sharp, it's like, well, there's 100 of these other boats out there, 84 of these other guys out there, plus locals and whatever. Like, am I going to be fishing behind people? And it's like, they're like spot on the spots. Like, you have to make the right cast. If you're off 20 feet, like we were talking, like, you don't have the right angle, your baits are moving too fast. The fish, if they're in the right mood, it probably doesn't matter so much, but like the spot that I was fishing, them things were very finicky. It doesn't sound like it from like me explaining the situation or the spot, but if you would make like a cast out of a 45 and try to let your bait sweep, you would never get bit until it was directly behind the back of the boat. Or like our dead rods on day one, I literally quit casting dead rods or quit casting our willow cat rods for a while, just because our dead rods were getting bit so much more. So just being aware of like, okay, well, yeah, I want to be casting. I'd rather be casting. I like doing something. I don't want to just sit there with two rods out the back of the boat, but like, you just got to be aware, like, okay, well, we just caught four or five fish in our dead rods, and we haven't had a bite on our casting rod. So we're either A, moving it way too fast, like we're just amped up right away in the morning, we're just moving it too fast, or they literally just want to eat it off the bottom. And so, like, just being aware of all them different changes throughout the day will probably in the end help you out a little bit. So,
yeah, man, I just find that interesting. You know, like you say, those boat race type tournaments are where it can be that situation. It's like, if you have all these, if you have like 10 good areas, like on Oahu, that's a lot of water. Like, you probably don't even need that much water, but 10 like single boat spots on the Mississippi River can deteriorate really fast. When you're boat 80 and you get to your first spot and there's a guy there, you could go your next nine spots, they're all one boat spots. There could be a boat in all of them. And it's like, you don't even have enough spots then. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, dude, that's such a mind game, dude. And
it is, it's hard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's fun. I love fishing the Mississippi. It's a really fun place, but it's a mind thing. I don't like boat race tournaments. It is what it is. I just don't like spots that I feel pressure to have to be the first one there. I just don't like fishing like that, but it just opens the door for opportunities in other places as well. So you got to make the best of it, and hopefully you make the right decisions. And yeah, I mean, it could have went a lot different for me if somebody else would ultimately made the decision to run up to that spot and sat there all day. So it's a mind game, and it's all about decision. That's how most of these tournaments come down to, is you make one or two of the right decisions.
And shout out to the local in a bass boat on day one.
Oh man. Yeah.
They were walleye fishing, obviously, then you're saying like they were in a bass boat.
Yeah, they were in a bass boat. I mean, I think they were just fun fishing for the most part. They were just catching whatever they could. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if they were looking to like keep walleyes or anything like that, but they were definitely fishing for walleyes. So yeah, that guy, if he's listening or if he ever listens to this podcast, hit me because I definitely want to thank you again.
Yeah, dude, that's cool. Then you rushed from that tournament. Basically, you had enough time to wash your boat, rig some tackle, say hi to the family, and then you were back on the water, but again, close to home, fishing the MWC on Oahu. Tell me about that one.
Yeah. Like if anybody follows me on social media, they know probably how much I love Lake Oahu. And over the last few years, it's pretty hard. Like if you haven't heard what's been going on in Lake Oahu, it's pretty mind-blowing right now, the size of the fish that are in, the caliber of fish and the numbers of big fish that are coming out of here. I mean, I never thought I'd ever experience anything like it. But yeah, so we get home and we unpack some things, get rid of the willow cat rods, and get all of our other gear and tackle and everything packed up. And it's like, it was kind of the first, like, I have a lot of history on Lake Oahu, but in the earlier parts of the year, like now, in May, it's definitely a little bit different than summertime or fall fishing. And I know that, and I'm pretty aware of that, but in years past, a lot of these tournaments that we fish on Lake Oahu, like the slots were, they're a big deal. Like you got to have good slots or decent slots to do well. Even if they're like, you know, sometimes like we won a tournament last year where basically we were boxing like 15 and 16 inches just because we couldn't find big slots. But if you could weigh another extra pound or two with every slot that you could catch, like obviously that's a big deal. But really where you can really separate yourself on Lake Oahu is with the overs. So obviously going into the practice, find the best baits, figure out the best way to get bit, and then figure out where the best or the biggest over areas are. And if you can catch slots in them same areas, and then what's the cutoff? Like, so I keep a pretty detailed dialogue or a log of what I caught, how I caught it. I don't really necessarily care a lot about water clarity, color, or whatever. When I'm doing these little things, I just want to know, what is going to be my cutoff or what I end up keeping for an over. So that whole week that we fished, or 5 days or whatever it was that we fished up before the MWC, like my first fish back on Lake Oahu was a 10 pound, it was a 30 inch or 10 pound. I don't remember, 5 ounce or whatever it was. I could look at my notes, but I'm like, heck yeah. I mean, it's super thick. And then the next fish was like a 3 pound slot. And I'm like, we're freaking back. And and then I fished all day and never caught an over bigger than that or the same size. I caught a couple more 30 inches, but they're like 7 pounds. And then I caught, you know, multiple 2.5 type slot fish, which I've never seen slot fish that big on Oahu. I've seen a lot of 19.5, whatever, but they don't weigh that much. They're like a 2.5 pound slot is a big slot on Oahu for the most part. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, we fish sun up to sundown every day, and it makes it fun because, you know, you never know, like when the next cast could be, you know, Max, he caught a 14 pounder over 14 pounds in practice. So you, like, you know, that them fish are out there, you know, that your boat's within 50, 60 feet of some of them fish sometimes. So just like that excitement alone keeps me going and just wanting to make that next cast. And, but so going through all the practice, we found a couple of areas that were holding like, I mean, crazy, crazy big slots, like 3 pound slots, had a couple over 3 pounds. But jokingly, I was telling Tyson, I'm like, I don't think we need much time on our slot spots. Like I have 4 slot spots and, you know, we could catch a couple overs there too, but they're not big ones, but our slots are going to weigh like 212 to 3 pounds. And I think we can do it in like 15 minutes. And like, I've never been that confident about a slot spot, but it was like foolproof. I checked it twice and it was just like pulling, see him, make one cast. Yep, we're golden.
Were you catching your slots?
So our slots were basically, we were throwing like a mooch minnow on a VMC moon eye. Just like an eighth and quarter ounce, and then just a jig and a minnow. Them were kind of the two things. I'd throw some crankbaits as well once in a while. So if you couldn't tell, like the fish are a little bit shallower. And then like for over, so we knew what our slot cut, kind of our slot cutoff was. And we knew what, like if we caught a 2.5 pounder, we're going to keep it. Cause in that tournament we could have 8 fish in our boat, weigh 5. So we have 3 to play with. Like, don't gamble too hard. Cause a 2.5 pound slot is still a giant slot. I mean, that's still like a 19.5 type inch fish.
And that's not how you're going to separate yourself. It's the big ones that you are going to separate yourself with.
Yeah, you got to keep yourself in the game with them slots, because I just felt like, honestly, like it was that easy to catch them that I figured a lot of these other guys had the same thing figured out, which they did. So I just knew that we weren't going to gamble super hard with our slots. But like day one, we pull into our area. And we had some misfortune. We had a camera guy with us, and you'll see that when the MWC video comes out. But we broke off on one fish. I think we ultimately lost like 5 fish before we even got one hooked up. So now that stuff starts going through your mind, like, man, like, I don't know. So then like then decisions can definitely haunt you. So then we lose 5 fish. We pull into a spot. I catch a 29.5 that was 7-12 or whatever. That was our first fish, and it was like 11 o'clock or something like that in the morning. And we look at each other.
Did you have higher standards than that fish?
We said if it was 8 pounds, we were going to keep it.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was so close that we're like, yep, we're good with this, especially after the morning that we had. Like, this wasn't really going our way per se. I mean, we had the chances, but we just did not capitalize. And then literally 2 minutes later, like I barely got that fish in the live well, and Tyson caught one that was 31, but it was a little bit lighter than mine.
Really?
It was like 7-8 or something like that. And I'm like, dude, I was like, we should, like, what we really need to do, because I felt like we missed something. Especially after seeing like Max caught that 14 pounder, I'm like, I just feel like we missed something. Like, we need to go pre-fish. And so I'm like, I think we should keep this fish. I think we should go catch 3 pound slots and then literally save a couple spots, and like, don't necessarily need a fish, but we need to, like, we just spent 3 hours going through our best stuff. We lost 5, which hopefully we catch them tomorrow, but we did not have that many opportunities. Like, we need something better for tomorrow is like what I'm thinking. And so we ultimately kept that one, and then we go slot fishing at like 11 or 11:30. We get there, and I literally thought it was going to take us, like I said, 15 minutes. I think my first cast, I catch like a 2.5 pounder. We keep it. And then we catch like a 2.9, like a couple casts later, I'm like, oh, there's better ones. I'm like, I don't want to keep 8 fish, because then we're going to be done. So we throw that one back. And then we went like 2 hours before we put another one in, maybe.
So, and when you're describing, you know, catching these slot fish, you know, these under 20 inch fish on Oahu, like, and you're talking about it not taking long, like, do you have like a spot on the spot? Like, you know, but so often we talk about it being more of like area fishing.
This was an area. This was like a shoreline that was, you know, ultimately I kind of expanded it on the day before the tournament. I checked it, caught 1 fish. Then I'm like, well, this spot close to it all look the same. And so I expanded it to like a 1/2 mile area. And then I also had a couple areas down south that ultimately set up the exact same. So like it definitely wasn't like have to make a specific cast, like this blind cast. They're literally everywhere. Gotcha. You look on forward facing, they're side scanned, they're underneath the boat. It doesn't matter. They're everywhere. And, I don't know if somebody already fished them fish before we got there or what happened, but holy cow, they would chase so hard and would not commit. And so we literally, what we thought was going to take us 15 minutes to get our slots, we fished the entire rest of the tournament there on day one, trying to upgrade our slots to 3 pound slots.
Exactly so what you didn't think you were going
to
do.
Yeah, like did not get to do any pre-fishing. But and then now my wheels are spinning for day two because I'm like, okay, we went through our best spot for big ones, caught two, very thankful for them. They're the right length, but they're skinny, and we didn't see that many more. And if them fish pull out, the wind changes, pulls that warmer water out of there or whatever, like that spot could be completely done. So, and then thinking about the slots, which like wasn't even really a thought going into the tournament, just because it was so dang easy to catch them that I thought that we wouldn't have to worry about them. And then we just spent 4 hours on day one fishing for them. So now my wheels are spinning for day two. Like our best spots burned up, no fish there. Our slot fish, yeah, I think we catch our slots there, but it's definitely not going to be fast, and they're not as big as what they were. So we basically fished completely different. We went on day two, we went to our same starting spot just to kind of work our rotation in the right area or the right way, because it was a spot further north, and then we would go down south if we didn't catch them on our starting spot. And first fish on day two, we catches a 29.5 incher, and then I should back up a little bit. I think we were in fifth place after day one. These might not be the exact weights, but it was like 25.13, I think, or something like that for first. And I think we were like 23.08. So definitely 100% within striking distance on Lake Oahe. Like you could catch two 14 pounders and weigh 28 pounds with two fish. Like that's just how it is right now. Like that's not that far of a fantasy. Like that can happen. And so like definitely knew that we were in it for day two. Day two, we go out knowing that we're not going to make up a lot of ground with our slots. Like hopefully we catch 2.5 pound slots, maybe get a couple bonus ones that are close to 3 pounds. But ultimately knew that we were going to basically fish our entire day until we got two big ones, or what we thought were going to be enough. And going into that morning, obviously you talk about it like, okay, we need to have probably over 25 or 26 pounds to have a chance to win it being 2 pounds back. And so like doing the math on it, you're like, well, we probably should not keep anything less than, you know, 9 pounds. Or if we get a 10 pounder right away, then it changes things a little bit, but kind of knew what we wanted for like around hopefully 18 pounds, 19 pounds for our two overs, and then get some giant slots and be good to go. Well, we go through all of our stuff, or that whole area, which takes like, it took like 2 or 3 hours. And right off the bat, like half an hour in the morning, we catch a 29.5 incher, weighed almost the exact same as the fish the day before. And I'm like, well, if we keep this one, we're going to have one that's over 10 pounds. And I caught one of them in practice. Tyson caught a couple bigger, but like they're definitely out there, but it could take all day and we might not get that other bite. So we threw it back.
It's so crazy. I find that to be so bizarre. Now, you know, it's so bizarre because that's such a big fish like that. There's an added, it adds to this whole conversation, but it doesn't, you know, if we were to go back and talk about, you know, like the Lake Sharp tournament or the Mississippi River tournament, it's the same level of pressure, just relative as like, yeah, you know, throwing back ounces, you know, like a 3 pounder in that tournament versus like a 2.75.
Yeah. We're basically, the difference is basically when you're on like Sharp and the Mississippi for the most part, the Mississippi definitely has some bigger fish for sure, but for the most part, you're gambling with ounces on Lake Oahe. When you're especially talking overs, like you're gambling with pounds.
Yeah.
Like that's the difference. Like the caliber of fish are just so much bigger. In another couple of weeks, that 29.5 incher is probably going to be close to 10 pounds, but it just was light. So it didn't really matter if it was 35 inches. And if it weighed what it did, like that's
going back.
That's just what it is.
Yeah. Have you ever thrown a 29.5 back? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you have, haven't you? You savage. Gosh.
Well, that's crazy. I mean, a couple of years ago, when we won that NTC, that's exactly how it was. We going back to like, we were not catching slots. So it was funny to even say it, but like, I didn't know if we were on the winning thing or not, but we literally tried to win that tournament with two overs each day just because we couldn't catch slots. So yeah, I mean, we have done that before, but it still is a weird feeling holding like
on tournament day, a 29.5-inch fish.
Oh, it's so big. It's such a big fish.
So anyways, all right, back on track. Sorry, I messed you around there, but I do think that living in that space, like at that moment in time, you and Tyson are in the boat. The vibes got to be good. Like the vibes have to be like top shelf to throw a fish like that back. So it's not like a devastating thing, but there's got to be some trepidation. But like how quickly then, let's get back on track. How quickly did the next big mark show itself?
So yeah, we threw that one back and we fished for like 2 to 3 hours, never had another bite, but I knew it could happen fast. So we run down to our next spot. I don't remember exactly the sequence of this, but I think we threw out a couple before we caught our first one, but you could just tell that them fish were in a definitely a way different mood already, just how hard they were chasing. So we get down to our first spot. I think it was like 10 or 15 minutes after our second spot, excuse me. We get down to our second spot and it was like, I would say like 10 or 15 minutes. And we hook up with a big one and I'm like, I knew it was a big right away when I set the hook on it. We get in the boat and it's like a 9-12, almost 10 pounder. I'm like, yep, this is exactly the reason why we threw that 29.5 back. And it was like a 30-inch fish. So not that much bigger, but just a totally different build on it. Like that one either spawned sooner and just got that much weight back on it or whatever, but just a different class of fish, looked totally different. And so we kept that one. This is probably around like 11 o'clock now, maybe. And still a lot of time, but like you just like, you know how, like if it's that hard to catch slots now, it might take all day. But so anyways, Tyson, he ends up catching like another slot while we're fishing for these big ones. And it was like a 2-pounder. We kept it. And then we ended up catching 5 more in that. I think we fished for like a half an hour. We ended up catching 5 more between 26 and 28. And we threw all them back. They were all 6 and like 6.5 to 6.10. And every time that you do that, or we did that, we're just like, oh man, like hope they keep biting.
Yeah. Cause you're throwing away a top 10, potentially a top 5 finish.
For sure. Top 5. Yeah. Yep.
But, and I talked about this with JJ when we were talking about his win on the Mississippi Rivers, cause he threw back a 23-incher in the morning, you know, obviously. And it's like, when you're looking at that fish, you're basically in the situation you're in. It's like, you can guarantee yourself a really good finish, but you're also in your own mind, you're kind of guaranteeing that you won't win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it all depends on like the order, because on that, if that 29.5-incher that we threw back in the morning would have came after we caught that 9-12, we both talked about it. Like we would definitely keep that. Like it'd be too close. Like it's too close to gamble with. Like you know, it's probably 8 ounces between the two overs. It's probably 8 or 10 ounces lighter than what we wanted, but like, we're not going to gamble with that. And so it all depends on the order. Like if you catch a big one right away, then decisions can definitely hinder your next decision, or your judgment on what to keep. And so anyways, we threw all the, I think we got 5 or 6 more 26 to 28 inchers, threw all them back. They were all like 6.8 to 6.10 type stuff. And Tyson ended up catching one right at the end the end of that area. That was like 9.8 or something, another 30 incher, giant fish. And now it's like 12:30. And so we pack up, we have 3 fish in the box and we run south even further, which we haven't fished them spots for 2 or 3 days now. So don't really know what to expect, which is exciting and nerve wracking at the same point. And we pull in there and we start catching them. And pretty soon I catch like a 3-pound slot, go a little bit farther and we catch like a 2.10. So just like, no, like at that point, we're just like, all right, don't let off the gas, but we have a freaking mega bag. Like, Now we, if we can catch one more giant slot to get rid of that two pound slot, like we almost can't have a better day. And if we get beat, it is what it is. But like, we have a mega bag. Like, we gave ourselves a chance now. And so we fished for like the next, whatever, 2 hours, and just never got that. Ultimately, I think we did catch like a 210 at the end of the day. So I think we had five fish in the box. We had two 2-pounders, the two big ones, and then that 3-pound slot. And then right at the end of the day, we caught like a 210, like with half an hour or something left to go. So that was kind of what ultimately ended our day, or how we finished that tournament. But yeah, we ended up weighing like 27.3, I think, which was the biggest bag of the 2-day tournament. And I think we won by 3 or 4 pounds to Justin and Melissa Cole, which them guys are absolute hammers, especially out here on the Missouri River. So it was a super fun tournament, but again, nerve wracking, just knowing that nobody's really out of it. I mean, if you're within a few pounds, 5 pounds, honestly, like, you're not really out of it. Just when there's 14, 15 pounders swimming around, it can change a lot of things really fast.
Yeah. And then you never, ever, ever throw out the fact that it's a reservoir and they're walleyes. And, you know, for any team at any given time, which this is like a whole nother podcast that I would like to have with you, is like, how do you stay consistent on a reservoir like that? Because, yeah, notoriously there's flip-flopping. Notoriously, you know, your fish can move, you know, much less be harder to catch sometimes, but.
Yeah, it's not that they can move, it's that they do move. They move all the time. It's very rare that we catch them 2 days in a row on the same spot. I mean, we'll fish a lot of spots 2 days in a row, but I'm telling you, they literally never stop moving. The bait is always moving. The fish are always moving. But just, I think it's just probably just because we spend so much time on Lake Oahe in general, and some of these reservoirs that we kind of know what they're, I like to say this now, but like, we somewhat think we know what their next move is going to be. And that's just trying to stay ahead of the fish. And that's ultimately, I think, what helps us out, along with the fact of taking some gamble sometimes, like on this last tournament.
What is so different, like your 19 and a half inch slots, which is a nice fish, like, that's a nice mm-hmm. walleye, you know, just generally speaking. But then you've got your 28 inch, 8 pounders, whatever, like how far apart are they living? Like, and what is it, like, what's the pattern? Like, what are the big fish doing or wanting, or like, what are they doing that makes it so they're not on the same spot? Like, big, talking about big picture.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the big fish aren't on the same spot as the slots, because it's a little bit different this year. There is a lot of slots mixed in with the big fish. But ultimately, with the introduction of the lake herring, they're just on a totally different food source. They're chasing lake herring around. Them big ones, that's how they got big. And they're chasing big bait around. I mean, we catch big fish shallow all the time. But generally speaking, for the most part, and it's no secret, most of the time, your big fish are not in the same spot as your smaller fish. And so just kind of having that little bit of knowledge, I guess. But just, yeah, like I said, they're not on the same forage is the biggest thing. Like, the big ones are on big baits. They're on, you know, some of these fish, you see different people posting pictures. They're eating, if anybody's fished like a walleye, I'm sure they've seen this with some of the bigger ones, but they have, you know, lake herring sticking out of their mouths, but they're still eating your jig wrap and whatnot. And like, they look like a catfish coming in, because the tails are so big on these lake herring, but the tails are sticking out one on each side of the mouth of the walleye. Like, that's how big of baits that they're eating. They're eating like 12 to 15 inch lake herring. So yeah, it's a different ball game than a lot of places. A lot of places, you know, when there isn't a different forage, if it's all shad or if it's all bugs or whatever the forage is like, then big ones are definitely going to be mixed in with the small ones. They're going to be wherever the most bait is. But on Lake Oahe,
Sakakawea, all these bigger reservoirs with bigger bait, they're definitely in different places for the most part.
How many boats in the top 10 were trolling?
Second place was. I know that for sure. Well, I shouldn't say. Yeah, they were. They had some issues with their boat, and they ended up borrowing a boat from a buddy. And talking to him that morning, I knew that they were trolling. So, yeah, trolling is definitely a very, very big thing on Lake Oahe. Well, it's a thing everywhere you go. Trolling is, you're never going to get rid of trolling. Trolling is just way too productive to not do it.
I think you could argue that trolling is as popular, if not more popular, than it's ever been with with certain individuals. Like, we're still nuancing so much with it. Like, it's still a growing thing.
For sure.
It just has to share, you know, the spotlight so much more with, like, forward sonar or jigging techniques that are more popular now with forward sonar. But yeah, I agree. And I just wanted to throw that in there almost to kind of give it a little bit of love. Cause, for sure.
Like, I think, like, I mean, a lot of, like, back in the day, like, pulling bottom bouncers and that kind of thing is definitely still very effective. But just, like, from what I see, it's actually, like, maybe the live scope or the forward facing has actually drawn more people to cranking, just for the fact that you can cover so much more water with it. And the reason why I say that is, like, for a guide standpoint or for family fishing, when you can go out and put four or five or six rods out and you can cover a bunch of water, a bunch of different depths, you're more than likely going to catch a bunch of fish. And then when you're doing the live scope thing, like, it's a one or two person type thing. Like, somebody trying to scope out of the back of the boat, it is not that easy if you're moving around a lot. There's certain situations, if you're spot locked on a point or whatever, then it's, you know, you could put two or three live scopes on your boat and everybody can be casting around at stuff. But I think it's actually, like, in my mind, I see more people trolling now than I ever have, especially out this way.
Where are you off to next?
Now we get to go down to one of my other favorite reservoirs, Francis Case. So this is going to be out of Pixound. We're doing the National Team Championship. It's like a 250 boat tournament. Tyson and I, the one that Tyson Keller, he's my Gov Cup partner. I'm his Gov Cup partner, however you want to look at it.
Yep.
And then we fish the MWC. We fish a lot of tournaments locally together. I've learned a lot from him. But, yeah, he's never been down there. And so I think he's really looking forward to it. I think he's hungry to keep chasing them and hopefully find and unlock some new things down there. And then after that, then we head out to Alpena. Then we got the 20-hour drive ahead of us, and we go out to Alpena, the roughest body of water that I think I've ever fished on. But we're going there at a different time of the year than what we did last year. And it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully the weather out there lets us move around and do what we want to do to try to find a few of them bigger fish.
Do you think I could ever get Tyson on?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He likes to talk. Sometimes you got to take the microphone away from him.
Oh no, that's perfect. He was built for podcasts, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, dude. You got to hook me up with his number or something like that. I'd love to pick his brain a little bit. I mean, he had a good finish, a solid finish. You guys were kind of neck and neck there at Lake Sharp there.
He was one of the boats that you seen on Tour Level Gold in the background.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, he wasn't going to let you off easy, was he?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I knew, like, that's, like, we're really good buddies, but, like, for that tournament, I'm not going to – like, we just didn't share a lot of information, which we didn't really need to. Like, if we're fishing upriver, like, I know where he's going to fish. Like, we used to fish Tuesday night leagues together. Like, I can't tell you how many times we've fished Lake Sharp, but a lot. So, like, what he knows, I know. What I know, he knows, type of thing. So, it's the same with, you know, for the most part, Lake Oahe and a lot of these other places that we fish.
All right, Dewey. Well, maybe we can close it out. If you want to throw anything out there, promote yourself if anybody wants to reach out for questions or anything.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody ever has any questions about fishing or just any sort of insight, you can message me on Facebook or Instagram, just my first and last name. And I'm pretty active on social media. if people message me, I get back to them in a fairly timely manner. I try to give everybody my full attention, and just because, like, when I was coming up, like, social media really wasn't that big of a deal, and it was just so hard to ever try to reach out to some of these guys to ever ask questions, even if it's just a super basic question. But like, just to get a little bit of insight on some stuff. So don't ever be afraid to reach out to me on social media. Follow along on Tour Level Gold. We got a pretty cool thing going on YouTube. It highlights five or six of us, and just kind of shows the behind the tournament scenes. And yeah, that's about it.
Right on, man.